What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey folks, this is the Lakers Legacy Podcast, and we are proud to announce a partnership collaboration with a brand new podcast app. If you're looking for a new way to listen to podcasts that's a lot more interactive and fun, well, look no further than the Cooler Podcast Player on the Apple Store. The app that makes sure you never miss the hottest sports talk by the Cooler with like-minded fans and listeners of the same community. So download the Cooler Podcast Player on the Apple Store, search for your favorite podcast, specifically look up the Lakers Legacy Podcast, we are up there right now, subscribe to our Cooler page, click on one of our episodes, listen away, and then join the conversation by commenting away down below on each episode. Add some emojis, like the cringe emoji, because I know that I can be quite cringe. Ask us questions about specific points we made throughout a specific episode. The Cooler Podcast Player is essentially like Reddit, but curated and consolidated per podcast community so that you can join the conversation in a safer, more intimate, and less trolly space than other apps like X. And you can do so with other like-minded Lakers Legacy podcast listeners. Also, you're likely to find one of us commenting and replying back to you guys directly within each episode feed in the comments section. So grab a drink, make your way over to the Cooler, and join the conversation now by downloading the Cooler Podcast Player app. Make sure to add the Lakers Legacy to your queue, and let's keep the debates and discussions going beyond the final sign-offs you hear from us at the end of each episode. The Cooler Podcast Player. Listen, then speak your mind. All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where on a day when the latest legendary statue was erected on Figueroa Street right outside Staples Center / Crypto.com Arena, celebrating a man who never gave a damn about how many shots he took or how difficult a shot was. Ironically, on that same day, it was the Lakers front office who pump faked and didn't take their shot. But maybe it actually made sense. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll get into it. All that to say, Mamba forever, rest in power, Kobe Bean Bryant. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, how did you like my little soliloquy? People don't get to see the video, but you do. I even had like motions and everything. It was almost like watching Hamilton, right?
It was like watching Hamilton. I was actually thinking, is he going to throw in? I'm not going to throw away my shot, like one of these references or what's happening here.
Yeah, I spared you from that. But yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Tommy, before we get into, hi, by the way, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
before we get into all of the NBA trade deadline hoopla or non-hoopla for the Lakers and recapping all of that minutia, were you able to catch any of the replays of the Kobe statue ceremony yesterday at all? If so, what did you think about it? And then as it pertains to the actual statue, was it the pose that you had in mind? We learned from Vanessa Bryant that Kobe would actually be getting three statues, two of which have yet to be built or unveiled. One of those yet-to-be-unveiled statues would be one of him and Gigi, which is very fitting, and then one will be of him wearing number 24. But yesterday, they unveiled the number 8 Kobe statue of him scoring 81 points, him with his finger raised to the sky to the crowd after he checked out and absolutely destroyed Jalen Rose. It was actually one of my predictions. I think me and my friends were chatting beforehand, and we had a couple of predictions. One was Kobe, after winning the championship against the Celtics at Staples, where he jumps onto the scorer's table and then has his arms open wide to the crowd. That could potentially be the number 24 statue. Another one of my friends predicted that maybe it would be Kobe Bryant flapping his jersey around after he hit that game winner against the Phoenix Suns.
Against the Suns, yeah. That was my prediction, actually.
Okay, nice. So you answered that. But did you like the pointing to the sky with his finger, having scored 81 points, which to this day is still the highest point total that has been filmed on camera for the NBA?
Yeah, I like the statue. I thought it was nice. I thought it was also, it's obviously like one of the biggest moments of his career. I also really like that Vanessa just came out and said, like, he chose this, so everybody F off. Like, if you have a problem with it, because, you know, the second, like, it comes out on Twitter, there's 1,000 people saying, like, this is a weak pose to choose. Like, because they didn't watch the ceremony, right? And that's exactly what she was trying to, like, kind of prevent against. It's like, this is their thing. Let them have whatever they want. This is, like, not random, you know, middle-aged men on Twitter to be, complaining about.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, when you do look at it, it does look kind of weird, because anytime you're freeze framing a man mid walk, it's going to look weird. You know, people were making comments, but the proportions seem off or whatever. And every time they'd say that or like reply to my Instagram post, I'd be like, yeah, well, Kobe chose the pose, so I don't know. Give it up to him. I like the pose as well. And for obviously everything that it stood for and meant, biggest moment of his number 8 career outside of winning championships, obviously. And that was without Shaq as well. I think that was like post Shaq era Kobe, number 8, trying to find his way. He scores 81 points on the night where I think that was the one and only game that his grandma went to and watched him play in person. So there's that added significance as well. But yeah, with regards to the ceremony, it was kind of like anytime they do these things where like former Lakers come, like Pau Gasol, Lamar Odom, Ron Artest, Sasha Vujicic, and anytime Phil Jackson speaks, I'm immediately transported back to when I was in middle school, high school, watching these games, right? So it's almost like a time machine, time capsule moment. And I forgot just what a great speaker Phil Jackson is and what a great storyteller he is. I mentioned it on Twitter, but when he was relaying all of these Kobe stories, which were so detailed, I was just like, man, I could watch like a 12-part Phil Jackson podcast series just talking about his time with Kobe Bryant. Because from Phil Jackson's end, you can tell it's like, he mentioned it himself, his relationship with Kobe wasn't always, I mean, it's never been flowery, you know? So he's very real about his relationship with Kobe. But even in spite of that, the way he's able to describe who Kobe was kind of really inspiring and very insightful. And, you know, that last story he gave about how he's been tracking Kobe his entire career, you know, his growth as a human being, his growth as a team leader, as a player, and for him to come full circle and talk about how the moment that he was most proud of Kobe was when Kobe stood up for Adam Morrison on Jimmy Kimmel. Like, it's such a funny moment to bring up and such an obscure player to bring up to make that point. But I think because of that, it made it all the more powerful when Phil Jackson said, and that's when I was most proud of Kobe. So any thoughts on that and maybe the rest of the Kobe ceremony?
Yeah, it was a nice ceremony. The Phil stories were obviously really cool. Phil is like so old now, man. It's like crazy. But it's funny.
He was more senile than he let on, but go ahead.
Yeah, he like, always has kind of looked like this, so it's like you kind of forget, but hearing him talk, it like it's like, oh sh, you know, it's like decades have passed since he like first became the coach, right? So the Lakers. So yeah, the stories were great. I really like the Adam Morrison story. It is funny. It's like the media and fans, even especially younger fans, have this like tendency to like clown on these end of the bench guys. I don't know why. It's just like people think it's funny, and it's like, okay, cool. You're like the 300th best player of basketball in the entire world. That's like funny. Let's like make fun of that, right? But I thought the story was good, and it kind of drove home the maturity of Kobe over like the course of Phil's time coaching him, right? Like 21-year-old Kobe when Phil first came in 1999, like probably was not, you know, if you put a mic in front of him and asked about like one of his teammates at the end of the bench, like, and asked what he thought about him, I don't know that he would have said something like that. So it shows the growth and part of what made Kobe so endearing to fans who followed his whole career.
Yeah, definitely. So we kind of got Kobe encapsulated all in that ceremony, and can't wait to see what the number 24 statue looks like. Do you have any predictions of what they're going to choose? Is it going to be him up on the scorer's table or him doing a fadeaway jump shot?
My guess is either the fadeaway jump shot, or when he hit the game winner against the Suns, was he already 24 at that point, or was he still 8?
He was still 8, yeah.
Okay. So I would go fadeaway jump shot, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that makes the most sense, but I wouldn't be surprised if they also did his arms stretched out wide. But they already did a non-basketball move pose with the number 8 statue. So yeah, maybe number 24 signature Kobe fadeaway is the move there. All right, with that said, trade deadline, Tommy. The Lakers did nothing. But there were actually a lot of moves that happened that last day after two pretty quiet days to start the week, surprisingly. But look, let me just lay out the landscape for you, and you can jump in here in a little bit, Tommy. But a lot of the Lakers' big major targets that they were rumored to have been trying to get, DeJounte Murray, Bruce Brown, Dorian Finney-Smith, Colin Sexton, I can go right down the line. None of those players got moved, first of all, okay?
Yeah.
So there's that. And then, and I'll just say this, if you're a fan who's frustrated at the Lakers front office in action, I think you're totally justified in being frustrated. I think just on the surface, knowing the needs of this team, for the front office to not do anything, not even like a minor move, it just objectively looks bad. Would you agree with me?
I don't necessarily agree, but I'll let you.
Okay,
continue.
Okay, I'll empathize with the fans first. I'll say it just looks bad. You know, for let's say LeBron James has no idea about the cap specifics and the constraints you're working with. For the average fan who doesn't know those constraints either, it just looks bad that you did nothing, right? What does that say? Now, digging into the specifics of this particular trade deadline, though, and you know, you and I had a text exchange back and forth right after where you kind of predicted this, right? In our last podcast episode, our precursor trade deadline episode, you said, I don't think they're going to do anything. I think that they're going to go to the buyout market. And I also think if they did anything, it would be like a small, like second round pick type of move, right? And you were right. And even then, like right after the trade deadline ended, I still texted you, man, but we still should have made a margin move with like these second round picks, you know, like we could have gotten like a Nick Richards or something like that. And that was me still in my heated phase of like, man, I wish this front office was more creative. And I think they can always be more creative. And so I'm kind of talking myself in circles, but the one thing I'll say is if you're frustrated with the front office, that's one thing. But I think a lot of fans today, and I think they're starting to realize this, but I think fans are mad, but mad at the wrong things. Because in a vacuum, if we're looking at this trade deadline in a vacuum, what Rob Pelinka has said to the media is 100% true, whether you want to believe it or not. There was not a lot of things the Lakers could do given the constraints they were working with and given the market. And I will outline the market to you in just a second. If you want to get mad at the front office, get mad at them for stuff that they did in the offseason that led to this point, but do not get mad that they were somehow unable to make a move this trade deadline, because as Tommy already kind of predicted, the writing was on the wall for them to not do much unless they were able to get like a DeJounte Murray on the cheap, you know, which clearly they weren't able to get because the Hawks were sort of playing the Lakers in some ways. But this is the reality of this trade deadline, Tommy, and something that I realized after the fact when I was telling you, well, they still should have made a margin move with those seconds. And then when I asked myself, okay, but which salary was going out for those seconds?
Right.
Then I started to go down the line of, well, Taurean Prince. And then you go through the rigmarole of debating with yourself, like, okay, Taurean Prince, yes, but how easily is Taurean Prince gonna be relinquished if he's Darvin Ham's favorite player, right? So I'm like, okay, maybe not Taurean Prince, but like Jackson Hayes and Christian Wood, you can put them two together. And then I forgot, I remembered, they have player options next year. Cam Reddish has a player option next year. These are not true expirings. And then I was like, well, Gabe Vincent, he makes like $10 million. Yeah, Gabe Vincent is on for two more years after this one. And then I started looking at who got traded, the entire trade deadline. And the one thing that was made very apparent to me, Tommy, is that expirings were the currency of exchange. And actually, they always have been, kind of.
Right.
Expirings and seconds were the currency of exchange this trade deadline. The Lakers had seconds. Yes, they had 5 seconds they could use. What they did not have were expirings. D'Angelo Russell, Jackson Hayes, Christian Wood, Cam Reddish all have player options for next year. And teams, especially in this new CBA, are so reluctant to have any salary, even if it's minimum salary, go on their books for the next year because, one, they may already be near the second apron or the first apron, you know? So having a Christian Wood next year for $3 million already pushes them there. They don't want that, you know? And they can't be guaranteed that these players won't pick up their player options. So I guess for me, I even had to take a step back from my initial gripes of, like, why didn't they make a margin move with second-round picks? And I had to realize for myself, like, I underestimated just how reluctant teams were to take back any salary that extended past this year. And if they did, Tommy, they wanted draft compensation. For example, the Dallas Mavericks traded Rashawn Holmes, who's on for two more years, to the Washington Wizards. And the Washington Wizards gave them Daniel Gafford. Guess what? The Dallas Mavericks had to give them a first-round pick in order to take on Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah, which
you know?
Is crazy.
So really quickly, before you go, look, these are the deals, the major deals that happened yesterday. Buddy Hield was acquired for 4 seconds and expirings that equaled $18 million of Buddy Hield's salary. Royce O'Neal, who a lot of fans were like, well, the Lakers should have gotten Royce O'Neal. He's only making $9 million. Royce O'Neal went for 3 seconds and 4 expiring players on the Suns, okay? The Lakers do not even have enough expirings to equal Royce O'Neal. Taurean Prince plus Max Christie, the only other expiring player, only gets you a player who's making $6 million, okay? We couldn't have even gotten Royce O'Neal if we wanted to, if the Nets said, we don't want any non-expiring contracts, okay? Kelly Olynyk went for 1 first, which is insane, and expirings. Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanovic, who the Knicks shrewdly traded for, they went for seconds, and guess what? Expirings. Xavier Tillman, who Lakers fans like freaked out about and said, oh, this sets the market. We can definitely get a Xavier Tillman type player. Xavier Tillman, who the Celtics traded for, they gave up 2 seconds for Xavier Tillman. Guess what the Memphis Grizzlies got back for Xavier Tillman? They got back nothing because the Celtics took Xavier Tillman into their traded player exception. So it's essentially an expiring. All that to say, a lot of the major moves that happened this trade deadline where teams were giving up seconds for these margin players, those teams had to have the expirings that the other team wanted, and the Lakers did not have those expirings. Even if you go back to last year, Tommy, when the Lakers traded for Rui Hachimura, because this is an argument people have been making. Well, why don't the Lakers just do what they did last year? Trade for like a Rui Hachimura, trade some seconds for Mo Bamba. Guess what? The Lakers traded Kendrick Nunn in 3 seconds for Rui. Guess what Kendrick Nunn was? He was an expiring. The Lakers traded Pat Bev in a second for Mo Bamba. Guess what Pat Bev was? He was a $13 million expiring player. And so, again, I say all that to say, if you want to get mad at Rob, fine, but don't get mad at him for not being able to make a deal this trade deadline, because it's increasingly, we're getting to the point, Tommy, where people just wanted to make a deal to make a deal, and we're going towards like insane levels of just bad asset management just because we're so mad that nothing happened. When in reality, if you want to get mad at Rob, get mad at him for not picking up Malik Beasley's $16 million team option, for not picking up Mo Bamba's $10 million non-guaranteed contract. Then we would have had the expirings to attach seconds to, but he didn't do that in the offseason. And so he was left with very limited resources to make any trades this trade deadline. And that's why I say I think fans are mad at the wrong things and mad at the wrong reasons. So that's where we're at now. And so did you want to touch upon anything I said and just elaborate on anything more?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said. And we've talked about this like fairly extensively offline. But I think the key is what you said, right? It's the expiring contracts. We have $6.2 million. And it's, by the way, $6.2 million in expiring between two guys who have been fairly important rotation players for us, right? Like we clown on Torian Prince.
And Max Christie, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, Max Christie and Torian Prince, right? So we clown on Torian Prince. There are not many guys on $4.5 million expiring contracts who can give us the kind of output he's given us. We just play him too much, right? That's like what we've always said is our problem there. Max Christie is a 20-year-old. He's not even 21 years old yet. Has shown a ton of two-way player up, like role player upside. So what are we getting for that $6.2 million in expiring? Plus, we would have to probably attach other assets to that, right? Like second-round picks, at least. What 6.2-ish, right? Because you could take back a little more. So maybe $7 million. What $7-ish million player are we getting back for that package that moves the needle? Factoring in that, like, we're dropping Torian, who has been playing 30 minutes for us, you know, per game. We're dropping, Max Christie, who's you know, played a significant role, especially with the injuries. Like, you're not getting anything back. I think, you know, the thing that I talked to you about was maybe it was a function this year of me not being as in the weeds as I normally am with this trade stuff. Like, I was really busy. Normally, I feel like the 3 weeks leading into the trade deadline are like such a slog for me. This year, it just sort of like snuck up out of nowhere. But like the none of the rumors or whatever ever felt like real to me. Like the DeJounte Murray thing always felt like, yeah, okay, that totally makes sense that the Lakers are going to commit to a guy who's guaranteed $100 million remaining on his contract, who's like, you know, to the extent he's better than D'Angelo, we're not talking about like significant like needle moving differences. Like we're not talking about like one's an all-star perennially and one isn't. If anything, D'Angelo has been an all-star, right? So it's like, you're telling me like we're going to give up first round draft picks plus D'Angelo Russell. It doesn't really make sense, you know? So I guess like that, none of that made sense. You look up and down the roster, like you're not trading LeBron. You're not trading AD. Jared Vanderbilt can't be traded this year. It's been very widely reported that they felt like they weren't going to get enough back for Austin. Gabe Vincent has unfortunately been injured and has like negative trade value with two more guaranteed years remaining on his deal. Like Jalen Hood-Schifino seems like a bust as a first round pick. So it, you know, at least for now, right? I'm not saying he is going to be a bust. I'm just saying like, it's not like he is jumping off the page as like a very like, you know, clearly good asset for you. There's just like, you go up and down the roster and it just like, nothing really makes sense. You mentioned all the minimum guys we signed, like all three of those guys have, you know, Wood, Hayes, and Reddish all have player options, as you said. So what combination of players? It's like the one thing that kind of made sense to me is if they were like, you know, let's dump Gabe and Jalen Hood-Schifino to get under the tax. If anything, shouldn't fans be saying, like, I'm glad they didn't do something like that? Like, that shows that mm-hmm. they are serious about winning. And in fact, like, as the reports have come out today, like, about how the Lakers didn't drop a minimum player to try to get below the tax line, which they could have done, the rationale for that was they didn't want to weaken the roster just to save some money. You know, so, and yeah. I think that is like a noble thing that we can point to. We could have burned our 2023 very brand new number 17 first round pick. We're not talking about a late 20s pick. We're talking about like our middle, almost lottery first round pick. We could have burned that in like a D'Lo Mozgov type of trade to like try to dump Gabe Vincent on someone else. And we didn't do that, you know? So I think like you can, the same way that people are like, oh, it's embarrassing. They didn't do anything. Like, I don't understand what that means. There's not a single player that moved yesterday that moves the needle for us, or is even better. Nobody that moved yesterday is better than D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, or Austin Reeves. Okay, yeah. And the guys who were pretty good who moved who could help us, Kelly Olynyk, PJ Washington, those are the two names that I saw yesterday, and I thought to myself, those guys could have helped us. Both of those trades involve first-round picks. The PJ Washington trade involves a top two protected first-round pick for PJ Washington. So that was like the market this year. There was not a realistic market. And the fact that we didn't do anything is just better, almost. You know what I mean? Like when you see what happened and who moved around. Like if there was a trade you could point me to, even the Buddy Hield, right? Oh, we wanted Buddy Hield for so long. Oh, he only moved for 3 second round picks. Buddy Hield would have required Rui Hachimura to like, and by the way, he's not, and by the way, that's not even expiring. That's just to like match the salary. You know what I mean?
That's my point though. I think we also learned that Rui Hachimura was not an attractive asset to the league. You know, he has $17 million for the next 2 years after this one. And so even if we were willing to give up Rui Hachimura, the Pacers wanted an expiring, you know? That's why I'm saying if let's say Rob Pelinka had Malik Beasley on his $16 million expiring contract, then maybe we would have been able to get Buddy Hield. But you know it wouldn't have just cost us 3 seconds. It would have cost us 4 seconds or like a lightly protected or maybe first round lotto protected 2029 first, right? So...
Yeah, I mean, and look, and without going too far down the rabbit hole, maybe it could have been the 3 seconds. But again, we can't like we can't keep relitigating the past decisions. Like at the time, dropping Malik Beasley and dropping Mo Bamba to like be able to sign Gabe Vincent and hard cap ourselves, like that made sense. Beasley was unplayable for us in the playoffs. Bamba obviously didn't really play. You know, you figure Bamba you can replace with a minimum type of guy, and he himself ended up signing for a minimum contract, right? And then Beasley, we also felt like was significantly worse than what Gabe Vincent could bring to us. It was a justifiable move at the time, right? And so, like, that's the thing. It's like for so many years, we've only had expiring contracts. And I think that's like maybe what's confusing people and causing people to be like, well, how come we don't have the right expiring contracts? No, that wasn't the point of this team. The whole point of this team was we're building a continuous roster to move forward with salaries that have some years attached to them with, you know, young guys, Rui, Austin, who we wanted to keep like long-term, Vando, like we viewed as part of our like young core, right? Who we wanted to keep and develop and, you know, have on our team moving into the future. So it just like, that is the trade-off, you know, you can't have it. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I want to push back on that a little bit. I think this is very hindsight is 2020, right? But I think in that hindsight is 2020 perspective, would you agree with me though, that I think the Lakers front office has maybe learned something in the last year or so? Because yes, Malik Beasley wouldn't have done anything for us. Yes, Mo Bamba wouldn't have done anything for us. But there were actually some very smart people during that offseason. I was speaking to Yazi Goslin, and at the time he wasn't thrilled with what the Lakers did because he actually advocated for just picking up those options because he said, the Lakers will be able to do more at the trade deadline with these expirings than they will these other players who you expect to be rotation players and who you might have to ship out if you want to trade if other teams even want those players in the first place. And I was like, well, can't we dangle Rui Hachimura on a pretty solid 3-year deal? And he's like, I don't know. You know, so I want to give credit to those types of people who got out ahead of it. And I just want to say, though, like, I think the Lakers can learn something from this, because if you look at the New York Knicks, they have had an Evan Fournier who has done nothing and has just been sitting in street clothes there for the longest while, for the last 2 years, for the sole purpose of just being the salary ballast that they could trade off. And now we see the shrewd parts of that, where they had a combo of both, Tommy. They had a combo of multi-year deals, but they also had a combo of the necessary expiring deals for when the opportunity struck. All of a sudden, all you have to trade is Evan Fournier, a couple of seconds. The Knicks did not trade any first, and you get Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanovic. You know, so I think my only pushback is, like, I think in hindsight, the Lakers should have done that. And I think moving forward, they should take note of that and at least make sure that they have more expirings on their books. So
that these are fair points, but everything has to be viewed within just the reality of the nature of how contracts work, right? And how much teams are willing to pay. Like, we don't have an infinite pocketbook. The Knicks put themselves in a great position. It took them 3 years to get into that position, right? They've had Evan Fournier for 2 years. They were waiting this whole time. So it's like, had we just been waiting with some guy burning $20 million in our cap space for the last 3 years and we didn't move him, it took this long, maybe people would be frustrated too. Obviously, the payoff is good, but you can't forget the amount of time that it took to get here. I also, you know, would flag that the Knicks' top two players make barely more than LeBron James by himself. So that changes the dynamics of, like, what you're able to do with your roster, right? It's like, you keep Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba. Yeah, of course, everybody knew. It's like unremarkable. Like, everybody knew those guys were expiring contracts. And those expiring contracts have some value. But, you know, what's realistic? What kind of message does it send in the off season to come into the season with two guys being like, we know we're going to try our best to trade these guys for 5 months. They are going to take up two roster spots and $20+ million of salary. And they're basically not going to be able to do anything for our team. And we're holding them for the chance that we're able to make something happen by the trade deadline. It just, like, that is one way to kind of characterize that line of, you know, thinking versus, like, well, we're probably not going to use these guys. If we drop both of them, we can get an impact free agent. Again, like a Gabe Vincent, who it's unfortunate that it hasn't worked out for him with his injury, but that's what we were doing. We were trying to win now. And I don't think that's, like, something that, yeah, of course we could say, like, at the time people said that's expiring contract. Yeah, they, of course it was an expiring contract, but there are other factors here that you can't ignore. And I don't know that we were going to, you know, Genie was going to be, or the front office was going to be okay going into the season. You know, we already came in at $166 million. The Knicks came in at $160 million. They were already lower than us. If we had kept Beasley and Bamba, in lieu of Gabe, we would have been over $180 million. You know what I mean? And you're paying crazy, like, Warriors level, like, luxury tax to keep Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba. So it's just like, these are all things that are technically true, but it's just like, it's a totality of circumstances, right? You have to kind of weigh every factor. And I just think it was very defensible to end up in the position that they ended up in.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, that is the summary point that I wanted to throw out there. In this vacuum of the trade deadline, it made sense. Everything Rob Pelinka has said thus far is not bullshit. And I want to just be clear, Tommy, you and I are not Rob Pelinka apologists. We once were, but over the years, especially during the Russell Westbrook era, if anybody tuned in during those last 2 years, we are not Rob Pelinka stans. We do not carry water for this front office. In fact, there are a lot of problems with this front office, including, I don't think they're very creative, you know? I don't think they do well on the margins. But again, given the constraints they were working with in this market, given the constraints of the path that they chose, whether you agree with it or not, in the offseason, they really could not do anything. And so when Rob Pelinka says, you can't buy a house if there's no sellers, he is correct, because nobody wanted what the Lakers had to offer. And the one thing that teams wanted, Tommy, the Lakers weren't willing to give up. Austin Reeves. We can debate that as well if we want to, but I don't want to. But so if you want to be mad that the Lakers didn't do anything, then be mad that they weren't willing to give up Austin Reeves. Is that the stance you want to take? I don't know. Maybe it is if you wanted to trade Austin Reeves for DeJounte Murray or whatever. But yeah, just to clear that up, we're not saying that, we're not making excuses for the front office. For once, we're just clearing the air and saying this is just the situation and it is what it is. And some fans, because they're so frustrated and mad, are starting to take that to galaxy brain levels of throwing out deals that didn't make any sense for the Lakers. That, so for example, Tommy, fans were like, well, they could have done something. They could have just gotten Royce O'Neal and Dorian Finney-Smith. Even if they, if the Nets didn't want Gabe Vincent, the Nets wanted D'Angelo Russell. So we could have traded D'Angelo Russell in a 2029 first for Royce O'Neal and Dorian Finney-Smith, goddammit. And I'm like, first of all, that's assuming that the Nets really wanted D'Angelo Russell. Second of all, that doesn't help our team now. Like, I don't think that trade-off makes any sense to get two more Taurean Princes and then trade away your third best player, because I think fans are so focused, Tommy, on this is terrible asset management. We're just going to let D'Angelo Russell walk out of here, Tommy, and not get anything for him. And for me, I'm like, I would rather D'Angelo Russell walk and use him for the next 3 months, not get anything out of him, and not give up the 2029 first. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to watch Dorian Finney-Smith and Royce O'Neal clank the hell out of Crypto.com Arena for the next 2 months, you know? So, anything else to add?
Yeah, these are the types of things that just make it embarrassing to become, to be a Laker fan, right? It's like, these are the types of trades I was kind of alluding to, like, that doesn't move the needle. You do that kind of trade and the Nets just laugh their asses off because now they get D'Lo, who's already coming in, right, on a kind of cost-controlled contract, in the sense of it's setting the base for his next contract, and you have his bird rights, and he's entering like the kind of prime of his career. He's like 27, 28 years old, right? So it's like you get that for two like wings that are, you know, widely overvalued in the marketplace. And like, what are you going to do with those wings, right? So it's like, great, now you have like less minutes for Rui Hachimura and Jared Vanderbilt, who you've like committed to long term. And it's like, you could say those guys are injured, but these are the kinds of examples of people wanting to make moves just to make moves. Like,
yep.
There was not a player who moved yesterday who was as good as D'Angelo Russell. And if there was, that player would have cost at least one first round pick. Because if Kelly Olynyk and PJ Washington are getting you first round picks, D'Angelo Russell can get you a first round pick.
Yeah. I think the problem too, Tommy, and I fall victim to this as well. Like, you know, you know me, we talk a lot about Moneyball players and working the margins. And as much as I'd love for the Lakers to play ultimate Moneyball and trade Taurean Prince in a second for Jalen McDaniels on the Raptors or Chuma Okeke on the Magic, as much as I'd love for that to happen, this isn't NBA 2K. This isn't fantasy basketball. And the Lakers are never going to do that. Taurean Prince is a vet. And McDaniels and Okeke, while you can argue that they have more talent and potential, this is a win now team. Those are unknown guys, and the Lakers don't have time to integrate those types of guys onto this team.
Taurean has played 50 games for us this year. These are things that you can't ignore, this kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah, and even if I wanted Nick Richards, again, we could have traded Taurean Prince and some seconds for Nick Richards. Again, you're trading for a big man who, while he could have definitely helped, again, you have to think about the swap of, here is a legitimate starter, whether you want to agree with that or not, that notion or not. Here's a legitimate starter, and now you're going to bring in a center who may only play 15 minutes, and you're reshuffling the entire operation again. You know, like, is it worth it to give up Taurean Prince and 2 seconds for Nick Richards at this juncture of the season when you're trying to actually finally pick up some steam and momentum for the second half, right? So in that respect, no deal is better than making a bad deal. That's where we stand, okay? That does not mean we're making excuses for the front office at all. So why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's close it out and maybe talk about some buyout guys. So with that said, we will catch you guys after the turn.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, so we are back. Before we get to the buyout guys, Tommy, I had touched upon these two teams at the top of the episode, but I want to bring them up as two examples of the different types of approaches that I feel like they represent two camps for Lakers fans of which direction they wanted the Lakers to go in this trade deadline. The first camp is what the New York Knicks did. Would you agree with me that the New York Knicks are one of the winners of this trade deadline? Not having to give up a first, they were able to just, well, one, they made the OG Anunoby trade to start off the trade deadline a couple weeks ago. But as it pertains to this past week, they only gave up seconds in order to bring in Bojan Bogdanovic and Alec Brooks. Would you agree that that was a shrewd move?
Yes.
Okay, so very smart move. The Knicks were operating. They were operating at 3D or 4D chess levels yesterday. Now, the other approach, Tommy, is the Dallas Mavericks. So would you agree with me that the Dallas Mavericks, in a vacuum in the today and now, improve their roster?
I agree that they improve their roster.
Okay, I agree too, because they got PJ Washington. Grant Williams was giving them nothing, and apparently he was a headache in the locker room. And they also bolstered their center depth by getting Daniel Gafford. So now they have two Derek Livelys. And so they improved their roster for sure. The problem is the Dallas Mavericks have already burnt through so much of their draft capital even before making those two moves. And then they traded an additional first to get PJ Washington. They traded another first to get Daniel Gafford. I think they did some weird pick swap thing to change some swaps with OKC Thunder to make things work. All that to say is the Dallas Mavericks mortgaged their future for this team right now. In order to get Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington, who, again, I don't know what they're going to do for the rest of the season. Maybe I'm going to eat my words and maybe it'll be worth it. And they are a top three seed and they make it to the Western Conference Finals. That is a possibility. What is also a possibility is they get to the sixth seed and they lose in the second round and they're stuck with this iteration, this roster iteration around Luka for the next 2 years that Luka's under contract, right? And they don't have any other assets with which to move their roster around and be flexible. Would you agree with me that a lot of fans seem to fall into do what the Mavericks did camp?
It feels like a lot of our fans want us to do what the Mavericks did, which is, it's crazy when you like list it out like that, right?
It is, but I guess if you want to like play devil's advocate, do you blame them if they're taking the perspective of, well, you're on a LeBron James win now team and timeline right now? Like, wouldn't you want to do everything you possibly could for LeBron James now while him and Anthony Davis are healthy, just the way that Mark Cuban knows that he may only have the next 2 years left with Luka Doncic, so he has to pull out all the stops? I mean, you in a vacuum, you would agree with that type of mindset, right?
There's limits to everything, I would say.
Sure. So I guess, yeah, I mean, it's a fair perspective to take, but when you actually lay out everything that the Lakers would have had to give up, and people are starting to like devalue the 2029 first to such insane levels and treat it like nothing just for the sake of making a move. And I want to tell you that, yes, what the Dallas Mavericks did in this trade deadline may look shiny. It may look cool. It improves them now. That's all you want. You're not caring about next season because we all could be gone by next season in some crazy zombie apocalypse, yada, yada, yada. But it's just not smart asset management. And these are the types of things that we're going to hammer Rob for in the future, you know, when we don't have these assets, you know. I understand if people are tired of hearing the kicking the can down the road type of plan of trying to get this superstar, that superstar. I honestly think that's just front office spin. And they're just saying that to keep the casual fans at bay. Outside of trying to get a next superstar, Tommy, I want 3 first round picks just so that we can be flexible with this roster. You saw what Rob was able to do with 1 first round pick. He was able to offload Russell Westbrook. And by the way, Russell Westbrook is another example of, guess what he was last season? He was an expiring contract. But yes, Rob Pelinka was able to use 1 first round pick to not only get off Russell Westbrook, but get 3 rotation players back, you know? So even if we're not talking about saving those 3 picks that we can avail of in the summer for a superstar, I just want to be able to have 3 picks so that we can maybe use 2 first round picks for an all-star and then use the other first round pick for some additional role players. You know, it's not all about the superstar here, even though I know that's what's being sold to the public. So I just want people to take a step back. A lot of people are unhinged right now, and I understand emotions are high. They did nothing. But then when you actually take a step back and look at the situation for what it is, you realize, oh, I can't actually give you like a list of 5 players the Lakers could have traded for, you know, with seconds yesterday. That makes sense. So that's the trade deadline. Tommy, let's move on to the buyout market. And one of the reasons why, or one of the reasons that go in favor of your point of the Lakers not re-upping Malik Beasley and Mo Bamba is the fact that that would have pushed the Lakers past the first apron into the second apron. And in the new CBA, if you're in the second apron, there are huge restrictions on what you can do trade-wise, but also buyout market-wise. So for example, if you're a second apron team, on the buyout market, you cannot sign anyone who was bought out who was making more than the mid-level this past season. So if they were making more than $12 million and they got cut by their team, you can't sign those players. And the teams that can't sign, for example, a Joe Harris, who was making $19 million and was cut, those teams would be the Warriors, the Clippers, Boston, the Suns, Milwaukee, the Nuggets, and Miami. They are all second apron teams. The Lakers, because they aren't a second apron team, they can sign anybody who gets cut, okay? On top of that, the one shrewd thing that Rob Pelinka did this summer was he saved about $1.9 million of the mid-level exception. He didn't give it all to Gabe Vincent. He saved it for the sole purpose of being able to use that money to entice an incoming buyout free agent. And so at this juncture of the season, if you want to sign somebody, I believe you're only signing them for the prorated amount, right? For the rest of the season. You're not going to get the full vet minimum. But the Lakers can actually offer somebody close to that. They can offer them $1.9 million. I believe starting today, it goes down to 1.6 million, but they can offer any buyout guy that they sign more than most other teams can. So they've positioned themselves well for the buyout market. So while they didn't do anything at the trade deadline, they are posed to make some moves at the buyout market. Do you have, so the one popular name right now that's swirling around is Spencer Dinwiddie. Talk to me about Spencer Dinwiddie, whether or not you think that would be a good get for the Lakers. He is probably the most surprising guy who got bought out. Nobody saw that coming. And so the fact that the Lakers have positioned themselves well for the buyout market is actually a good thing. And this was a name that, you know, was even being floated around as a trade target. So if the Lakers can potentially get a Spencer Dinwiddie for free, then all the more it makes sense. But some other names to keep a lookout for would be Joe Harris, who got cut by the Detroit Pistons, Robin Lopez, maybe Otto Porter. He's on the Utah Jazz. The Jazz may actually keep him because they might want to make a play and run. But yeah, Otto Porter, Marcus Morris, Evan Fournier, Danwell House, Danilo Gallinari, star Danilo Gallinari's name, Marcus Morris, Thaddeus Young, and surprisingly, former number 7 lotto pick of the 2021 draft, Killian Hayes. But talk to me about the potential buyout list and Spencer Dinwiddie.
One quick comment on the list. If this was around the time we first started doing this podcast, Killian Hayes would probably have already been signed by us as a former lotto reclamation project.
That's true.
That we used to love to sign back then. Killian Hayes is going to sign with that type of team, right? Like that's what that guy's looking for. But to talk about Spencer Dinwiddie, I mean, yeah, I've actually never really been a big Spencer Dinwiddie fan. I've always thought he was, I mean, like when he came up, I know, when he first came up with the Nets, like, and he was this like unknown, you know, undrafted or second round pick out of Colorado. And, you know, he didn't really get a ton of time with the Pistons his first couple years. And then he started to emerge with the Nets and he was kind of exciting. And then I feel like he went from that to just being like supremely overrated very, very, very fast. He put up like wildly inefficient numbers on like bad teams, basically. Other than like, I think he had 1 year when he was teammates with D'Lo in Brooklyn, and they did okay. But you know, he's just like, you know, for $20 million, I'm looking elsewhere. This is like crazy too, right? Like when you look at his contract, what he was making, and compare it to like what we signed D'Lo for, it's like it should put things in perspective for some fans. But you know, if you can get him for free, this is pretty much like the best like 15 man signing that we could have hoped for when we kept this roster spot open. I mean, you look back at the previous years of who we were able to like get with this last roster spot. Obviously, Markieff Morris, that championship year, helped us quite a bit. But then it's been guys like, you know, Andre Drummond. Honestly, I don't even remember who we signed last year, if anyone, after all those trades. But you know, it's always like, it's always these like kind of uninspiring guys who you feel like you could have signed them for the minimum if they were available in the summer anyway. Spencer Dinwiddie is not a minimum player. He's like a legitimately a pretty good player. And if we can get him, like, especially on this roster that has like struggled so much with backup guard play, with Gabe Vincent missing the entire season, effectively, right? He's a guy who can give you like, I think he's a career over 3-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. He's had seasons where he's been like over 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. Mm-hmm. As a secondary playmaker on a LeBron James team, especially off the bench for this team, that's incredible. And that's exactly what we need. He averages 4 free throws per game. He's had seasons of 5, 6, even 7 free throw attempts per game. He gets the line very well and hits 80% on his career. And we all, you know, we all know his game and kind of like his ability to put pressure on the rim and his ability to take people off the dribble. The one thing that I think is interesting in the stats that I saw is how effective as an offensive player he is. Like, I know, you know, if you're like me and you have not watched a lot of Brooklyn Nets over the last 8 years, you've missed most of Spencer Dinwiddie's career, right? So just looking at the numbers, he kind of feels like an inefficient player. he actually ranks, like, by offensive metrics, like, very, very well in terms of his efficiency. And I think what it is, like, he makes up for some of his inefficiency with his shot selection by getting to the free throw line. And I guess the key is, if he can cut out some of the inefficiency with his shot selection, I think it kind of changes his game and makes him an even more effective player. I know it's like, you can kind of roll your eyes at a comment like that and say, like, okay, he's been in the NBA for 10 years and he has not done that yet. He's never, like, been on a good team, though. You know what I mean? He's never been on a team where it's LeBron James and AD. There's, like, a laundry list of guys ahead of him who are going to get their looks before he gets his. He's averaging 10 shots per game this year, which is the lowest he's averaged since, I don't know, I'm looking back, it's like basically since the first season that he started consistently playing and starting. This is the lowest number of shots he's taken. So he's, like, trending in that direction already. And if you look at his catch and shoot numbers, like, as a catch and shoot 3-point shooter, he's, like, over 40%. He's like, a well below league average as an off the dribble 3-point shooter. And unfortunately, he ends up taking a lot of off the dribble 3-point shots. But all of this is to say is, like, we're now nitpicking, like, kind of nonsense things about a guy who we could get for free, who's, like, fair marketplace, at least a $10 to $14 million player in this league. And so I think if you have a chance to do that, you just do it and you don't think twice about it. And it sounds like he's very, very clearly, if you read through the lines of, like, the quotes from yesterday, he's very clearly, like, our number one target. And I'm hoping we can get him.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only downside, and it's a big downside, Tommy, is that Spencer Dinwiddie in a vacuum, in a competent coach's hands, could be a very powerful tool. Spencer Dinwiddie in Darvin Ham's pocket hands could end up being a nuclear bomb that self-detonates on you and explodes the entire operation. So I think that's the biggest concern for people. We'll get there. We'll get to that point when we get to that point. Right now, the Lakers are banged up. They need all the help they can get. And yeah, obviously, he doesn't fill the point of attack needs of this team, but you just hope Max Christie's ankle injury isn't that bad and he can rebound. Cam Reddish is coming back soon. Right now, the biggest thing for me is, like, he just helps out those solo Austin Reeves minutes, you know, so that Austin Reeves can focus on being a scorer and not this, like, tug and pull of being a playmaker, of being a scorer, and then he's in no man's land turning the ball over. Like, no, Spencer Dinwiddie is the perfect in-between of all of that, and he is the best talent play on the buyout market. And so if you can get him, he's an LA native, you go and get him. Now, let's say we can't get Spencer Dinwiddie. Are there any other players on this list that you'd be intrigued by? For me, like, if we just need a vibes locker room sort of guy, like a Jared Dudley at the center position, I'd sign Robin Lopez up and then hope that he can also just be an impediment to Jokic. That probably not going to move the needle, but in terms of the vibes, Robin Lopez would be great. In terms of actual skill set, as we've mentioned before, a pure shooter like Joe Harris for 10 minutes a night would, I feel like, open things up a lot for the Lakers. And if you can't get Joe Harris, like, Danilo Gallinari would be great as well, just to have, you know, yeah, we just need that Michael Porter Jr., even if it's like a Dollar Tree Michael Porter Jr. off the bench that we can go to, you know? So whether it's Danilo Gallinari or if Davis Bertans gets bought out from the Charlotte Hornets, I want a pure shooter that LeBron James can just toss it to. He can curl off a screen. Maybe he doesn't even need a screen, you know, like a movement shooter that can just knock down a shot in the vein of Matt Ryan, you know? But obviously Danilo Gallinari is more experienced. Davis Bertans is more experienced. Joe Harris is more experienced. So I would look at those types of guys, and then you're gonna laugh at me, but if we can't get Spencer Dinwiddie or any of those guys, I would also give Evan Fournier a shot, because he can actually handle the rock a little bit and be a steady sort of facilitator for you, outside of the fact that he can do a lot of those, like, poor man's Goran Dragic-y type of things. But yeah, any other names stand out to you?
So I think most of the guys you listed, I think I'd be interested in, with the caveat that I think some of these guys you could be, you might be able to get on, like, a 10-day contract if your top options don't, like, pan out. I think the thing that's dangerous about, like, targeting specifically a guy who's been, like, career known to be a movement shooter, I mean, Davis Bertans has had on up and down years. His last year with the Wizards, he shot 32% from three. His first year with the Mavs, he shot 36% from three. He's gotten it back up to his career numbers, you know, last season and this season on much, much lower volume because he doesn't play. But, like, the scary thing about, like, going after a guy who's, like, one-dimensional like that, like Danilo, maybe a little less one-dimensional, but, like, you look at these guys' numbers, like, Joe Harris hasn't played this year. No one has any idea if he's cooked or not, right? Like, Davis Bertans played half a season last year, played a quarter of a season the year before, played less than half a season the year before that, has only played 15 games this year. Danilo Gallinari played a quarter of the season last year and has only played six games this year. Like, we have no idea what the state of these guys is, right? Like, if anything, on the list, if we want someone who has had a relatively recent history of stepping up in the spotlight and, you know, has that kind of killer mindset and you know, gets boosted up by playing with stars, I would look at Marcus Morris potentially. I mean, I don't think we really have a need for him either, like, to be honest with you. But, like, that's, like, maybe somebody I would look at only in the sense that, like, yeah, he's struggled. And I think part of that was, you know, he's getting older and he's probably towards the end of his time with the Clippers, I think they were asking him to play like too many minutes. But this season, you know, he's playing 17 minutes a game for the Sixers, or had played 17 minutes a game for the Sixers, and is back up to 40% from three on 2.5 attempts. So still making one a game. And even in his decline the last couple of years with the Clippers, he was, you know, shooting a high volume of threes, hitting above league average, about 37%. So, you know, we don't necessarily need this dude to, like, you know, play 20 minutes. But if you're thinking about, like, a random guy who is a vet and can come in cold-blooded and just hit some shots, like, to me, Marcus Morris, I'm taking my chances on him to hit you a shot in a playoff game or like a key game down the stretch over Danilo Gallinari at this stage of their careers. And likewise, Davis Bertans. And like Marcus Morris might be cooked, but like I would take, if I need someone to defend someone one-on-one for one possession, I'm taking Marcus Morris over Davis Bertans.
I will push back on that 1,000% just because I have too much PTSD from hearing Clippers fans just absolutely dying at Ty Lue's overusage of Marcus Morris, and I could see the exact same thing happening with Darvin Ham and Marcus Morris. And I just watched Danilo Gallinari's 20 points with the Pistons last night, where he had 20 points and 4 of 6 from three, and he still looks good to me. I would rather trust we need one of those Euro shooters, you know, who's also plays smart basketball. This is just purely subjective and personal. I'd rather have Danilo Gallinari than Marcus Morris. But at this point, we're just nitpicking shooters, right? And if the Lakers can get any one of these guys, that would be great. I actually think if he still has any juice left, Otto Porter may be the best guy to get in terms of all the skill sets you need, because even if he's cooked, he's 6'10". Like, it seems like after he won the championship with the Warriors, he's like, I'm out, everybody. And you never heard from him again. But again, it remains to be seen whether or not the Jazz will actually buy out Otto Porter, because if they have play-in aspirations, which it seems like they might, you know, maybe they keep Otto Porter on. But if he's bought out, Otto Porter, I feel like, is better than any one of these guys if he's healthy and you can rely on him for 15 minutes, because he is like Torian Prince, but he is bigger, taller, longer than Torian Prince, and probably a more reliable shooter. So, and actually, I just saw a tweet from Eric Pincus where he just tweeted out that his gut says Dinwiddie chooses the Mavericks simply because they can pay him more than the Lakers can, actually. And even after set off, he can earn twice as much in Dallas because of taxes. So I don't know. For Dinwiddie, it'll be up to whether he wants to come back home or whether he wants to come back to a place that's familiar with the Dallas Mavericks. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But so yeah, maybe we should be putting more focus on guys like Joe Harris, Otto Porter, Marcus Morris, Danilo Gallinari. But yeah, lastly, Tommy, to close this episode, we haven't even actually talked about the Lakers team. How do you feel about the team? I mean, this is the group that we're gonna ride with. I've intimated it before, but I think this roster is much better than its record says, and we all know the problem is Darvin Ham, and injuries here and there. But I think now that the dust has settled of the trade deadline and you don't have that cloud looming over guys' heads, I still do think that this is a good group of guys who believe that they can bounce back from adversity, who have shown multiple times, even in just the last year, that they have bounced back from stuff like that with their backs against the wall. They can embody that ethos and spirit that D'Angelo Russell has shown the last month or so when there was so much noise swirling around him about getting traded and questioning his basketball play and whatnot. I think this team can wear all of that on their shoulders and really make a second half push, provided that they get some more health luck on their side. But I do think they have something to prove. I do think they want the redemption from last year. And at the very least, whether you agree with it or not, I do like that we're going to get at least 1 year of seeing how continuity plays out. It may blow up in our face, but I'm just glad, Tommy, that the whole theme of this season was cohesion and continuity, and whether it was due to circumstances and not having trade partners or whatnot, we are in a position, Tommy, where we get to at least see a full year's worth of what bringing back a core rotation of players looks like. And I just want to see how that looks like, even if it doesn't pan out. So yeah, your thoughts on this group of guys moving forward?
I feel like about the same, honestly, as I did preseason. I think to your point, the record is not even close to what I would have expected. I thought we were going to be much better than this, right? But it's not like necessarily we came into the year thinking like we were for sure the number one seed in the West. Like, we knew the Denver Nuggets were still going to be there. We knew the Clippers were, you know, especially post Harden trade, the Clippers have been like amazing. I think the other teams, like, it's surprising to probably everybody that the Timberwolves have been as consistently good as they are. It's surprising probably to most people that OKC has been as good as they are. But when you look at the rest of the West in a 7-game series, I mean, you can't say with certainty that we beat any of these teams, right? It's like the same thing as last year. It's like you couldn't say with certainty we could beat any of those teams. It just, that's how it worked out. And I think we have a shot against Minnesota. We have a shot against OKC. We have a shot against Phoenix, shot against the Pelicans, Kings, Mavs, Jazz. Those are the other teams, right, in the top 10 right now. The Nuggets and the Clippers, I would like to avoid. If we make the playoffs, it would be ideal to avoid those two teams in the first round. And I think we can hopefully do that if we can avoid the play-in, because I think those two teams are going to end up the top two seeds. But, you know, like, my overall perspective has not changed. I still think this is, like, talent-wise, a top four team in the West, or at least a top five team in the West. And so it's just a matter now of, and I hate to jump on the excuse train with the injuries, but, like, we really do have to get these guys healthy. We need our rotations to be set more. Unfortunately for all of us, we've wasted so much time this season messing around with like nonsense lineups and rotations that like never made any sense. And so now the fear is like we're 5/8 through the season and, you know, we don't even know what our best line. I mean, we know what our best lineups are, but like when I say we, the front office, the coaching staff doesn't seem to like know what our best lineups are still. So there's definitely like wood to chop here, but if this team can just like focus on trying to get the 7 seed, the 6 seed, try to avoid the play-in one time, you know, that might be helpful for our postseason chances. I just like the thing about the Western Conference is, again, it's like one injury changes things, right? Like Jamal Murray has missed some time this year with injury. If he's out, that is like that. The Nuggets are not going to win a championship, right? I'm not saying they're not going to go well or go deep in the playoffs, but they're not winning a championship without Jamal Murray. One injury can change a lot of these teams. The Clippers lose one of their guys, right? Especially, and all three of them, especially the main two guys, have had injury problems. Phoenix is obviously like Bradley Beal is like a, you know, one step away from like constantly injuring himself. So it's like there are teams that, you know, have some, you know, a little bit of weaknesses that maybe we can exploit. So I feel okay overall about the team. We need to get help now to help us in the short term. And then, you know, once April hits once March hits, we need to like, by that time we should theoretically have Gabe Vincent back, Vando should be like on the way. Hopefully everybody else on the roster is healthy at that point, and that's like we push at that point, right?
Yeah. I feel more than okay, because maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm foolish, maybe this will all blow up in my face, but I really like this roster. I like the group of guys that were compiled. I don't know if you saw the D'Angelo Russell podcast with Anthony Davis. This is a group of guys that actually really like each other and I think believe in what they can do together. And Tommy, I'm just glad that we didn't sell low on our third best player. You know, this could have gone a number of different ways. We could have panicked the way that we usually do. We could have, you know, caved in to crazy fans' demands of doing something, and we didn't. And we still have our third best player in D'Angelo Russell, fourth on some nights if Austin Reeves has it going. And I think this team has something to prove. D'Angelo Russell himself has something to prove. Fans are going to make the jokes all they want. You know, they made the jokes that D'Angelo Russell was ducking the Nuggets last night, which is insane. But they're going to continue to make the jokes about D'Angelo Russell until he proves them wrong. Maybe he won't prove them wrong, but I'm just glad he gets the opportunity to find some redemption against the Nuggets. We might not even play the Nuggets, to your point. And, you know, we're nitpicking over something that hasn't even happened yet. We might not even face the Nuggets in our run if we're fortunate enough to get there. But I'm just glad that this group has a chance to right the wrongs from last season. And I think that has intangible effects with regards to this group has tangible experience and lessons and a journey to fall back on that they all went through together that they can sort of channel when it comes time to actually take it into overdrive. And we've seen even in this short amount of time, when this team needs to take things into overdrive, if they've been healthy, they've been able to do it to a certain extent, you know? So I'm excited to continue to see that journey. And if you're worried about D'Angelo Russell, like, you know, since he's now comfortable about the trade deadline being over, his play will regress. D'Angelo Russell is still playing for his next contract, even though he has a player option. You know, he still needs to ball the hell out. He wants to make money. He wants to have a home, you know, whether that's with the Lakers signing a new multi-year deal or playing so well that another team outbids the Lakers, you know, D'Angelo Russell needs to play well. So with that said, go Lakers, go to Staples Center right now, go to Crypto.com Arena because the Kobe statue is up for everybody to take pictures with and look at and gawk at. And so I think I'm going to go to a game next week, actually, or after All-Star weekend. And that'll be my first opportunity to see the new Kobe statue, which should be really cool. And hopefully by then the Lakers have strung together some wins. But yeah, with that said, calm down. Don't freak out. The Lakers will be fine. And we will catch you next time. Tommy, see you later.
Peace.
Laters.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.